Okay, Randall, question with no research. How tall are you right now?
5'9¼".
All right, so if you had been born 6'5", which professional sport would you have pursued?
Oh, 6'5"? I probably would think it'd still be baseball. Still be baseball.
I'd want it to be basketball, but 6'5" isn't tall enough. I'd have to have another three
no,
inches.
No, it isn't.
I'd have
I know.
to be like 6'8".
That's what I was thinking. Exactly. I'd have to be way taller. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I thought, I mean, the answer for me, of course, would be professional wrestling. But if we're talking about a real sport, I guess, I guess I'd have to say baseball as well if I was 6'5". And since we're talking about baseball today, why don't we get into it?
Yeah.
It's season number one, episode number three, Sports Out of Time, the world's shortest batter.
Shortest player in Major League Baseball history. Today, we get to talk about that. Well, we already talked about it, but everybody gets to hear it.
To pull it back a little bit behind the curtain, this was one of the earliest episodes that you had pitched to me. And I think, you know, to go behind the curtain for me, I think this was the first episode that you pitched me where I really was like, okay, I see what we're doing here now. Like, yeah. I understand where we're going with this, right? Because I think initially I was still trying to figure out like what angle we were doing. Like, we started with the Bills and I was like, okay, that's like a hometown thing. And then the wrestling thing. And there is like a Liverpool thing coming down the pike. And I was like, okay, am I doing too much homery stuff? And this Eddie Goodell story was the one that was like, yep, okay, now we're in the zone. Now I'm feeling good about this one.
Yeah.
Randall, before I forget, how did this story make its way to you initially? How did you think about this story?
This story, as I've told you, is pretty much my inspiration for the entire podcast idea, right? So I have known this story since I was a little kid because I have a book that I grew up with called Baseball Players Do Amazing Things, which was published in 1973. Mm-hmm. And I, you know, as a kid, I reread this little book probably about a million times. And it was a series of books. Basketball players do amazing things. Football players do amazing things. And then, of course, there were presidents, you know, little biographies. But I stuck with the sports ones because that's what I like the most. And this particular story of Eddie Goodell is in this book. And I don't know, as a kid, I just thought it was the coolest story, right? So it always stuck with me. That was the only story that I remembered as an adult being in this book. Now, Babe Ruth is in this book.
Of course.
Clearly. And there's a lot of other stories, but that one was the one that stuck with me.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm really glad we got to talk about this because as I think I mentioned in the episode, so I don't want to go too far into it. I think for a lot of people, they've probably seen the image of Eddie Goodell or are at least familiar with the famous photo, even if they are not familiar with who this person is or the story behind it, because it is sort of a curiosity. It's like a famous photo and moment in sports history, even if you don't know the background of it.
Yeah, I think you're probably right. Over the course of time, people have seen the photo. I think it's probably in the Hall of Fame. If they've visited. But you're right. I mean, we dug into the backstory and it was really interesting and cool. And a lot of characters that come out in the story. So it was obviously that wasn't in the book I read as a little boy.
Sure.
But researching it as an adult, you're like, oh, this has many layers to it. So it was a fun story to do.
I just want to make a point. I would do just tiny bit of housekeeping here before we get too far away. People have been reaching out, or folks who've been enjoying the podcast and reaching out. Thank you so much. I appreciate all y'all who have enjoyed what we're doing so far. I just think it's going to keep getting better as we keep going on.
Yeah.
But I've heard a lot of people, you know, enjoying the audio clips, the little dive in moments that I've been adding. And I know that I got a little out of hand with them in the wrestling episode, but I knew that was coming. I have to warn you, I have not yet done the audio edits for this week's episode. I have not decided which clips I'm going to use. I'm going to spend the next couple hours after we're done recording. trying to find some stuff. But this is from an era where there is not a ton of actual audio that I can pull from. So I'm already pre-warning the fans and myself and Randall that I'm not totally sure how much audio we will have compared to other episodes with something this far back. I will try and find some things. Certainly, I won't give up that easy. But because of that, because we're probably going to miss a little bit of audio time, I did actually want to talk a little bit about baseball in general with you, because I've noticed a few things about doing this podcast. And this is going to be a hot take. Since 2009, when the Yankees won their last World Series, I feel, and I don't know if it's just in my head or if it's very obvious, that I have been down on baseball as a sport. I don't know if I'm just, I was burned out on it, if it'd been the games are too long, if I just didn't seem like I cared as much as I was supposed to, like I wasn't as excited I was supposed to be.
Okay.
So I feel like for the last, maybe the last like 10 years, baseball got kind of pushed to the back burner for me. Okay. And doing this pod has actually kind of rekindled my interest in modern baseball, even a little bit. It's just sort of dragged me back toward the center for baseball. And now you've said it before. I think baseball is like your number one. Yes.
Baseball has always been my number one for my entire life.
Yeah.
I understand what you're saying to some degree. Not that it's, I'm still excited by it, but, I do think the other sports have gotten so much faster, right? Mm-hmm. The play has gotten so fast and quick, and baseball is still baseball. It's not a fast game, but the efforts they're making to try to speed it up, to try to just get to the action, I think are positive. So hopefully, I mean, from what I've seen, I was able to go to a minor league game earlier this year, and it's the first live game I've seen with a pitch clock, because the minor league has done it for a while. Mm-hmm. And it was great. I mean, I really enjoyed it. I mean, you do have to pay attention more than you used to, because you can miss an inning like that, right? Really quick. But I think that's going to be a big improvement, and hopefully, you know, people feel that way in the end. Cause I know there's some, you know, anytime there's a change, people are like, I don't know about this.
And I also want to ask you a question, because you've been such a big baseball fan for years, and we've talked baseball many times. You know, growing up in upstate New York with an old man who loved baseball and loved the Yankees and sort of foisted that Yankees thing onto me as a young man, we used to go to the Cooperstown Hall of Fame, I would say once a year. I used to go with my grandfather, used to go with my dad, used to go all the time. So often that I almost kind of took the Hall of Fame for granted, because it's so close. Sure. And then I went to some other sports Hall of Fames, and I was like, wow, the baseball Hall of Fame is way nicer than all these other baseball. Did you get a chance to go? Have you been up to Cooperstown?
I have. I've been a couple of times.
Yeah.
And, you know, the first time I went was incredible, right? I thought it was the, you know, one of the coolest things I'd ever done. And I've been back. Unfortunately, my children do not enjoy it nearly as much as I do. So dragging them there has become more of a, it's more torturous than it is fun. So I don't do that as much, but it's a really cool Hall of Fame. I've only been to one other major sports Hall of Fame, and that was the Hockey Hall of Fame in Toronto, which was pretty cool. I'm not the biggest hockey fan, so it was all new to me, but it was pretty cool.
Well, and the other reason I bring it up is because, you know, this is, you know, objectively, I guess this is a history podcast, right? We're talking about a lot of history. And if you're talking about sports, I think the most fascinating part for baseball for me now is simply how much history there is, how far back into American history in particular baseball is ingrained. And I do think as we go forward, we're going to find that baseball is going to be quite a treasure trove of wild and outrageous sports stories going forward.
Absolutely.
So, Randall, a couple other things real quick just before we jump into this week's episode. But hope folks are enjoying everything so far. Again, having a lot of fun producing it. Spotify, SoundCloud, Apple Podcasts. Please go on and subscribe or follow along so you can catch all our season one and upcoming season two episodes. Yes, I'm still working on the Apple picture. I promise I'll get it done this week. It's been a really wild week. I know I'm working on it. And also, folks, you know, again, not to sound too desperate for it, if you're enjoying the show and you're enjoying listening to everything, please go ahead on Twitter and Instagram particularly and give us a follow on Instagram, yeah. Because that does seem to be at the moment where I'm doing most of my weird extra content. I threw a little bit of cut content up on our stream last week. I threw some I was having a lot of fun just turning song titles into the word sports out of time for a couple of days. I was doing all sorts of weird stuff on there. if you're enjoying the show, we don't ask for money. I'm not trying to make any cash on it. This is just for fun. But please go ahead and support us. Instagram, Twitter, Facebook. I guess I'm going to have to put that Facebook page up. God, I don't want to.
Yeah, probably do. Probably have to.
Probably have to. all right. So... might as well get into it. This was a really fun and exciting episode for me to do because, again, this is a story that I was only vaguely familiar with. This was sort of my Tim Woods moment. And I do have to realize, that's the other thing I wanted to point out. So the reason we are doing this week, not that we wasn't planning on doing it early anyway, is because when I went back in the editing process of our Tim Woods episode last week, I then realized that we recorded that episode after this and I had referenced this episode. I was like, Eddie Goodell. And we have not talked about him yet. So now we got to do this one like immediately.
Yeah, we have to do it. Yeah.
So there you go. That's it, folks. We might as well get into it. Bulk of our episode 3, season 1, Sports Out of Time, Eddie Goodell, the world's shortest batter. Quick before we jump in, when I said to you, I'm going to jump into this, as I was getting ready, my phone picked that up and started playing the song Jump Into the Fire by Harry Nilsson. And I was super confused for about 30 seconds. Like, what the hell is going on?
right. What is going on?
What is happening? What's happening? Randall, right. How are you today? Welcome back. It's nice to hear from you. How are things on your end?
Everything is good. How about you?
It's the worst time of year to be an educator, but we're working our way right through it. Just plowing right through.
Yeah, I can imagine.
So I'm excited to talk about this today, this story you sent to me. And it's funny, you sent me this story and I'm looking through the notes that you sent me, which you did a great job on, by the way. And I'm looking this up and I'm like, I feel like I know this guy. And what I knew was just the picture of this guy. There is a famous picture of Eddie. And and that's like, oh, wow, now I can finally connect these two things. So before I let you dive into it, I think for some context, we are both what you would consider average sized men, I would say, correct?
Yes. I think we fall in the average. Yeah.
I feel like I'm my license says I'm 5'10", but it feels like that's lying.
Really? Because mine says 5'9". And I don't think you're taller than me.
No, I think we're right in the same wheelhouse. I think it depends on what your hair, how tall your hair is at any particular time.
Exactly. I'm the height that I don't feel short. I don't feel short often, but then when I see a photo of me with other like men,
yes,
then I see, wait a minute, I'm shorter than everybody else in this picture, with the exception of you and your family.
Now, that's interesting you say that. One, because we're an Italian and Middle Eastern family, I did for a long time reign as the tallest person in our family at 5'10", which is not something that's to take lightly. But my next follow-up question for you was this, because what is the tallest friend you have? Because my best friend, the guy I used to podcast with, my former bandmate, is 6'5". He's a big, giant, tall man. And my whole life, I have assumed that I am small because I spent a lot of time around this guy who's 6'5", and it's made me feel small by comparison, but turns out we're the normal ones.
Right. You know, that's interesting. I had a friend in college and I lived with in New York, who's a roommate, who was 6'3". And to me, that was like I wanted to be 6'3". It seemed like the perfect height. Another roommate that he was not tall, another roommate I had, but he had a friend who was 7 foot tall who came to visit, and it was insane.
It's too much.
That's too much height.
I have said many times in both public and in private that if I had been born a little taller, 6'2", 6'3",
there's no question that I would have attempted to be a professional wrestler. There's not even a real, I can't even think, it's the only thing that ever stopped me.
The only thing holding you back.
The only thing holding me back. I would have done anything it took otherwise. But Raider, I'll let you get into it today because the story, there's a lot of parts to this story, so I don't want to step too far on this. Sure. So why don't you get into why you picked this story for this week?
Yeah, this story I remember from my youth. It was part of a book series that I had as a kid, and I always remembered it. It's the book was called Baseball Players Do Amazing Things, and the series included football players do amazing things, basketball players do amazing things, yeah. Daredevils do amazing things, but it also had biographies on Abraham Lincoln, JFK, you know, those types of people. But this story in the Baseball Players Do Amazing Things, which was published in 1973, by the way, this story always stood out. I remembered it. It was just one that kind of captivated me as a kid. I don't know why, but it just did. So that's really why, I mean, it's one of the reasons why I fell in love with stories about sports too. I'm assuming as a kid, you read these things and you're like, oh, this is really interesting. So you want to read more. So that's why I've always kind of clung to this particular peculiar story.
Yeah. And it's interesting too, because and I just want to bring it up really quickly. These books that you're talking about, even for someone who was born in 1986, even someone who grew up in the 90s, these did sort of exist, these little tiny books. I had a couple of them about like Joe Montana. It's like these were things before the internet that you used to learn about things you wouldn't have known otherwise. Like now they seem irrelevant in the age of Wikipedia and ESPN and Baseball Reference and all that. But back then, these were like all you would ever know about the players that you cared about.
Absolutely. These were just like encyclopedias back in the day. Yes, we had a set of encyclopedias, and I read through a lot of them.
Can really help me with my schoolwork.
There is something you could have which would help you a lot. Do you know what that is?
No, but I'm afraid you're going to tell me.
Yes, it's the new Encyclopedia Britannica.
Encyclopedia Britannica. Now you tell me. I've got a report due tomorrow.
On what?
On the exploration of space.
Take a look at this. From the first beeps of Sputnik to the triumph of the Apollo moon landing.
Hey, I'm impressed.
That's pretty much irrelevant today, right? So yeah, these books were integral in our childhood.
So so this story stuck out with you. Can you give us a little bit of framing about what we're looking at here today for folks who are probably unaware of this story?
Yeah. So this story is it's about the shortest man in baseball ever. Okay, my sources for this story include the book I just mentioned, Baseball Players Do Amazing Things.
Yes.
Wikipedia, as we all know. There's a couple of articles that I just want to mention. There was one by Ryan Constantino about Bill Veeck, who is a central figure in this story. And Eric Robinson's story about Eddie Goodell in a website. It was the National Pastime Baseball in Chicago. I think it was an article published in 2015. So let me give you like I said, Bill Veeck is one of the major players. So we'll start there, right? The who. Mm-hmm. So Bill Veeck.
And I think that's a mistake that we've made in our society is correlating cost with value and cost with return. And they have no correlation. And I guess you learn that because you see a ball player who gets $1 million who can't play, you know? At $100,000, he would be stealing. And the fact is you pay him $1 million doesn't make him that much better.
Bill Veeck was the owner of the St. Louis Browns during this story. And most of the time when the name Bill Veeck is mentioned, baseball fans are going to think of Disco Demolition.
Yes.
The 1976 Chicago White Sox wearing shorts as part of their uniform. And of course, this story today about Eddie Goodell. Okay.
Yeah.
And then another figure in this story is Bob Kane. And he happened to be a pitcher for the Detroit Tigers for this story. Now, a brief summary of Kane's career. He pitched for five seasons in the majors between 1949 and 1953. He amassed a record of 37-44. With a 4.50 ERA in 140 appearances.
His
defining moment as a major leaguer and what will always be known for is facing one batter on August 19th, 1951. Now, that one batter is the main star of our story, Eddie Goodell. Eddie Goodell, he was born June 8th, 1925 in Chicago. And he was born to what they considered normal sized parents, right? Mm-hmm. Eddie also had normal sized siblings, but Eddie would only grow to be 3'7" and weigh 60 pounds as an adult. Okay.
Yeah.
So at this point in time, the terminology regarding Eddie Goodell was mostly they considered him a dwarf, right?
Yeah, and I guess this is where I should pop in here. I did my research on this because I am a professional, as you all know. So I did some research here. This is from Washington Education, from the University of Washington, and they get their information from the Little People of America website. So the terminology that is accepted typically across the United States today, as of 2021 when this was published, is person of short stature, little person, or dwarf. This refers to the medical condition known as dwarfism. Dwarfism is defined as a medical or genetic condition that results in adult heights of less than 4'10" or shorter among both men and women. Typically, you could use any of these phrases, although according to the Little People of America, most people who experience dwarfism do prefer the term little people. And again, that number 4'10" is the number, the defining line. So even though your wife, my sister, is quite short, she does not fall under the medical definition of being a little person or a dwarf. She's just a very short Middle Eastern Italian woman.
Exactly.
All right. So I just wanted to get that out of the way before we moved on. So,
absolutely. So Eddie Goodell had worked as a riveter during World War II.
Yep.
Because he was able to crawl inside of the wings of airplanes, right?
That was the way things were.
He used what he had. And he was a professional performer. Mm-hmm. After the war, Eddie was hired in 1946 by Mercury Records as a mascot to portray the Mercury Man. Mm-hmm. And he sported a winged hat similar to the record's label logo to promote Mercury Record recordings. And some early Mercury recordings feature a caricature of him as its logo. So, Eddie was using what he had, right? Unfortunately, during that time, it probably was not easy. I mean, it's not easy.
No, for Eddie. And that, as a history teacher, my first thought of looking at this from 1925 and going into this era, probably into the early 1940s when this is happening, it really was a time in America, we don't tend to talk about it in terms like this, when it was you were finding it where you could. Jobs were not what you thought they were. Life was not the way you expect that it would have been thinking it is today, right? Jobs were transient. You didn't live in the same places. You followed jobs across the country. Yeah. So if you were a person like Eddie Goodell, you probably went wherever you needed to go and did whatever you needed to do to find work, because in the 1930s, and especially after 1929, this era, any work you could find was important.
Right. Yeah. We talk about the gig economy today.
Yeah.
But I mean, that was the ultimate gig economy, right? Again, because you were getting work where you could find it.
Time is a flat circle, guys. Everything just comes back over and over again. Yeah.
Well, let's get to the story, right?
Of course. Yeah.
So after stints owning the Cleveland Indians and the minor league Milwaukee Brewers at the time, Bill Veeck led a group that purchased the perennial cellar dwelling St. Louis Browns on July 3rd, 1951. Mm-hmm. Now, at that point in the season, they were averaging about 3,700 fans a game. And that was 9,700 fewer than the Cardinals, the St. Mm-hmm. Louis Cardinals.
Yep.
And the Cardinals and the Browns played at the same ballpark, Sportsman Park. So they were getting less people at the same venue.
The Eddie Goodell incident is just one of many across the resume of Bill Veeck. You know, he was interested in bringing fans to the ballpark.
And you just never knew what you were going to see. And fans at the ballpark on this exact site on August 19th, 1951, were treated to some history when 3'7" Chicago-based...
Now, that's interesting. Drawing from the same audience, too. And they're not drawing anywhere near the same audience. Yeah.
Exactly. Now, again, they were perennial cellar dwellers, so that played into it, right? Now, as part of a flurry of promotional activities, because that's what Veeck did best, he decided to do something special during a doubleheader scheduled against the Detroit Tigers on August 19th, 1951. Mm-hmm. So that day was meant to celebrate the 50th anniversary of the American League, and the club's chief sponsor, the St. Louis Browns chief sponsor at the time, was Falstaff Beer.
For mankind's pleasure, this is the one. Get pleasure, Falstaff's time. The most refreshing beer a thirsty man can pour.
as pleasure. Every premium quality ball staff you pour.
Mm-hmm. Now, Bill Beck contacted a booking agent to search for what he called a midget at the time,
yeah,
who was somewhat athletic and game for anything. All right. Now, the agent sent him Eddie Goodell. Now, Eddie Goodell was initially apprehensive to the idea due to the potential danger of being hit by an errant fastball.
I think we
can all relate, right?
I thought about that a lot. Anytime I watch baseball, I'm like, God, it would suck so bad to get hit by a pitcher. If as a normal person, I'd be like, that's it. I'm done. I'm just out of here now.
Yeah. Exactly. So you can imagine what it would be like for him.
Yeah.
But he soon grew excited at the idea of being a cup of coffee big leaguer and the attention that would come with it. Because again, like you said, he's finding work where he can get it. So, hey, this, I could turn this into something else potentially. So the only hint that Bill Veeck gave to the 18,000 fans in attendance for this doubleheader was on the day's scorecard. Okay. In black and white, there was an entry for a new player, Goodell. That's all it said, who had the rather curious number of 1/8, 1/8 printed beside his name. Now, when a local reporter asked Bill Veeck about this, he simply shrugged it off as a printing mistake. So he's just trying to really milk it for all it's worth.
Can I just say, I love from this era of the world we lived in, like this time, everything was just so like seedy your pants. You could just do this. You wouldn't, this, none of this would ever fly in the world of sports today. Everything is so structured and so rigid. Just the fact that you could make something like this happen is so fascinating to me.
What's behind your theory of showmanship in baseball?
Well, I happen to have a very ridiculous theory, according to many ball club operators, that it should be fun. You know, I don't think that baseball is such a grim, serious thing. Sure, I don't want to interfere with the game, but I do want everyone to...
So following the first game of the doubleheader, which the Tigers won 5-2, Bill Beck turned Sportsman Park into a carnival featuring acrobats, baseball clown Max Patkin at the time, a band playing at home plate that featured Browns players, including Satchel Paige on drums.
Ooh.
And he gave out free Falstaff beer for the adults in the crowd.
That would get me out. I'd be going for sure. Absolutely. I'm on the way now.
Right? Now, the highlight of the fun was a large cake wheeled to the infield.
Yeah.
Now, we've all seen these types of things in the past, usually on TV shows. I don't know anybody who's seen one of these things live.
No, this is a television only.
Right? Except for 1951 when this was a real thing. Now, from inside the cake emerged Eddie Goodell.
They didn't know what was going to happen. Nobody knew what was going to happen. Not even French Sauché, who he pinch hits for, knew this was going
to
happen.
I started to lead off, and the umpire called time and said there's going to be a pinch hitter. And out of the dugout, Eddie Goodell came trotting.
Wearing a Browns uniform with pointy shoes and a pointy hat. I don't know why he needed pointy shoes and a pointy hat, but
it was the style at the time, I guess.
I guess. So Falstaff executives, unfortunately, were vocally displeased at being promised a large promotional event and ending up with only, in quotes, a little person in a costume jumping from a cake. Now, Beck could hardly contain himself as he waited for the real surprise. The pitcher for the Browns retired the Tigers in the first inning of game two. When the first batter for the Browns was about to step to the plate in the last of the first, St. Louis manager Zach Taylor signaled for a pinch hitter. Now, the crowd was shocked because, first of all, it's the bottom of the first inning. And then they were also shocked because they saw a 3-foot-7-inch tall batter wearing the number 1/8 start limbering up with three toy bats.
They said, Eddie, why not one swing? Well, first of all, his bat was tiny. He could probably not hit the ball, but he said, Mr. Veeck told me if I take a swing, there's a sniper up on the roof that'll shoot me dead.
It feels like such an elaborate troll job. Like it feels like he's going out of his way to be a dick.
It's incredible. Oh, it's just, I can imagine something like this happening in a minor league game today as a joke. Or like the Savannah Bananas doing something like this.
Of course.
But, I mean, this was the major leagues.
Well, I think the part of this that's really interesting to me before we get to his at bat, you know, Goodell is the character here. But the person here in this story who fascinates me the most is Bill Veeck.
right, there's like, no doubt. There's no doubt.
Like, what the kind of man that Bill Veeck was. I've done a little bit of research. I've watched some content on Bill Veeck in the past, even before we had talked about this. These are the kind of people that become names you remember. These are the weird folks. You're like, what a strange guy. What a weird guy. What an odd character. Might be a shady character. But these were the folks who back then did whatever they could, right? This is what it took to be the owner of a baseball team in 1950. You had to do whatever it took. There was like a carnival barker aspect to it.
It was, yeah, the ultimate in promotion. And Bill Veeck deserves his own story someday, right?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, big time.
Right? As Eddie Goodell steps up to the plate, the umpires quickly tried to stop the at-bat.
Yep.
But Bill Veeck made sure the manager was prepared. And he presented the official copy of Eddie Goodell's valid contract as submitted to the American League office.
He's got receipts. I got the receipts, baby.
Right here. And after about 15 minutes of deliberation by the home plate umpire, they summoned Goodell to the batter's box, right?
Yeah.
They had, you know.
And thus the famous picture. Yeah.
Right. Could you imagine this happening today? I mean, it would be shut down so fast, it's not even funny.
Well, it is something that I have discussed is with baseball fans when watching baseball players. Does the size of the strike zone change with the size of the baseball player, right? Does Aaron Judge have the same strike zone as Carlos Correa, right? But these guys are all essentially within the same range of heights, right? Like, how does this define itself to somebody who's 3'7"? how do you define what is or is not a strike?
Right. So as Goodell came to the batter's box, the catcher ran to the mound to have a quick strategy conference with Bob Kane.
What do we do?
Yeah, exactly. I don't know what we're supposed to do here. So Bob Kane proceeded to throw four straight balls well over the head of Eddie Goodell, and he was laughing as hard as anyone in the park during the final two. And Goodell took his time as he trotted to first base, playing to the crowd.
After his walk,
after ball four was called, Eddie started to trot down to first base, and halfway down to first base, Eddie stopped and took his hat off and bowed to the crowd on the first base side, bowed to the crowd over on the third base side. I said, "You kind of hammed it up going down to first base." He said, "Man, I felt like Babe Ruth."
And after being pulled for a pinch runner, Goodell slapped the substitute on the rump, as they say, and then he took even longer to run across the field to the Browns dugout, tipping his hat and bowing to cheers multiple times.
The crowd's here for it, it seems like. The crowd is ready to go. They're raring for it, right?
Apparently. I mean, he's taking multiple curtain, I mean, not a curtain call, but he's bowing multiple times as he's leaving the field.
A wild time. Again, the thing that really sticks with me is just that the sort of cavalier attitude that existed during this time. You could just pull these sort of daily pranks, these events, these little gimmicks to get people through the door. And it does feel, and again, I know that I'm a big wrestling mark, but there is a lot of professional wrestling to this. My very first thing, my very first connection to this growing up was watching WrestleMania 3. And I did happen to pull this up because it was the thing I was thinking about. At WrestleMania 3, I watched this on VHS multiple times as a kid. This is one of the most famous WrestleManias of all time. Hulk Hogan versus Andre the Giant. Macho Man Randy Savage versus Ricky the Dragon Steamboat. Classic professional wrestling. But buried on this card is a match that I watched a million times as a kid. It was King Kong Bundy teaming up with two, at the time, what you would refer to as midget wrestlers, Little Tokyo and Lord Littlebrook, a little English guy, little Japanese guy. And they were fighting Hillbilly Jim and his two little wrestlers, the Haiti Kid and Little Beaver, little Haitian guy, little American Indian.
Bundy's got him.
Uh-oh.
Come on. Smash him, Bundy.
Oh, wait a minute.
Smash him, Bundy. Is he going to splash him?
He better not.
Ooh, he's going to drop
the elbow.
Right? I'm like,
Oh, jeez.
And this is, like, I'm thinking about this. I'm like, so you got hillbilly, Haitian guy, indigenous American, Japanese guy, English guy, King Kong Bundy. This is what we grew up on, guys. Like, if you wonder If you wonder what it was like growing up in a certain era, this is 1987. This isn't the 50s. This is like right. late. This is not that far away. It does have a sort of wrestling aspect to it, sort of carnival barker, like get him through the door, get him laughing, get him mad, if that's what it takes, as long as you have them there.
Yeah, no, you're exactly right. Yeah. That's what I thought of immediately when I read this today, is that professional wrestling, maybe, I don't know what it's like today, because you're the wrestling guy, right?
We'll do a whole bit about wrestling in a couple of weeks. I got a whole thing about that. But what I will say really quickly to answer that question is, professional wrestlers today are much more like real athletes. They are in considerably better shape. They work out all the time. They're not drinking and smoking cigars and doing drugs at the bar with the fans afterwards. It is treated the way that a professional athlete would be treated today.
Right.
For the most part.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So, but into the promotional aspect, has it changed since the 80s?
Yeah. Because now you got to remember that, you know, the major wrestling company, the WWE, Vince McMahon, Triple H, all those guys, they're a publicly traded company now. So the days of, you know, the attitude era of wrestling, of this sort of carnival, you know, wrestling still appeals to the base nature of people. Like, you know, the still idea is find some way to get people through the door. It used to be, you know, little wrestler versus King Kong Bundy. Today it's, can you get music sensation Bad Bunny or YouTube star Logan Paul to show up and fight an established wrestler? There's still a carny aspect to it. It's just modified for the modern age. Wrestling is sort of like a carnival anyway. It's all the same kind of vibes. Yeah,
exactly.
So how did this play out? I'm so curious. Like, did Goodell ever do anything else after this? Is this his one and done?
So let me give you some of the aftermath of this at bat. So within 2 days, the American League office had voided Goodell's contract, but they could not erase his one appearance for the Browns. Mm-hmm. And on September 6th of the same year, Eddie Goodell had an at bat for an amateur team in Sycamore, Illinois. And this one ended with him leaving the game after getting into an argument with the umpire. So he's clearly trying to play on his quote unquote fame at the time. And he's bigger than the umpire now, his second at bat. Now, several weeks later, a police officer in Cincinnati stopped Goodell for being drunk and argumentative and carted him to jail. Hmm. And Goodell tried to convince the arresting officer that he was a professional baseball player.
That's a good move. That's the first thing I would do. Officer, didn't you see me out there? I was sweating. I walked. I got in first.
What do you mean? I'm a professional baseball player.
It's as good as a hit.
Oh, it's hilarious. So then in 1959, Bill Veeck owned the Chicago White Sox.
Yep.
And he hired Eddie Goodell and three other little people for another memorable appearance. This time, they were dressed in Martian clothing, they were lowered by helicopter into Comiskey Park, where near second base, they abducted... the another short double play combo of Nellie Fox and Louis Aparicio and made them honorary Martian.
Baseball. He's also a one-of-a-kind man. He's a dreamer who's not satisfied until his dreams come true in front of a full house. For 50 years, Bill has dreamed up thousands of different schemes, always aimed at delighting the paying customers. He put the players in shorts, installed a shower in the bleachers, and built the world's first exploding scoreboard. But Bill has had his ups and downs operating ball clubs. In Cleveland, the world champion 1948 Indians set a league attendance record.
So Bill Veeck obviously had a connection with Eddie, or at least tried to keep Eddie in his sights, which is, you know, nice.
Well, you know, he's one of his guys now. He can go back to him anytime. Yeah,
exactly. And in fact, Veeck later employed Eddie as an usher at Comiskey Park because... In typical Veeck style, he had received complaints about ushers being too tall and blocking fans' views, so he brought in some little people to be ushers. Story turns a little tragic.
Sure.
Eddie's life, you know, it was a roller coaster.
Yeah.
And on June 18th, 1961, Eddie Goodell was found dead following a drunken incident at a bowling alley that left him battered, bleeding, and suffering from internal injuries. Now, his mother discovered him lying dead in his bed the next morning, and he had bruises about his knees and on his face, and he was only 36.
Yeah.
Now, at this point, Bill Veeck had some health issues and was at the Mayo Clinic. So the only person affiliated with baseball to attend his funeral was the Detroit Tigers pitcher, Bob Kane.
Good on Bob Kane.
Yeah.
Yeah. Good
and
on
he
him.
Drove
yeah.
300 miles to attend this. I mean, yeah. that's stand up, don't you think?
Well, you know, and that's like the sad reality of like a guy like Eddie Goodell in 1961. You know, this guy, you know, born in 1925, struggles to find work. Yeah. We said almost everywhere he can do it. And the reality is that there is still always going to be people out there, assumably, who are going to look at this person as someone to be battered or beaten, right? As someone right. who can be victimized, yeah. right? And that sadly is, yeah, and that sadly is the reality for probably lots of different folks out there in the world, even even now, not just in 1960.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I, you know, during my research, it sounded like this, you know, his drunken brawls or scrums, because I don't know how much, you know, how well he was able to defend himself,
yeah.
was fairly common. So it did seem like he was victimized quite a bit. So, and until his own death in 1997, Bob Kane honored Goodell each year with a personalized Christmas card that featured a picture of Goodell in his batting stance and the inside caption reading, "Hope your target in the future is better than mine in 1951. So yeah, Bob Kane really kind of hitched his wagon to this, and he embraced it, which, you know, not everyone would have done, which was pretty cool.
Yeah, I think that's it's amazing too. And again, I love that there's I love that when you look at guys like Eddie Goodell and these events, you can sort of trace the course of how sports has changed over time and how sort of society's changed over time, right?
Yeah.
We talked about a variety of different things here, looking at different promotional aspects. And there's still wild promotions we see even today, but this just feels like it feels like a time farther away than it really is. And that's something I look at all the time as a global studies teacher. It always feels farther away than it really is.
Yeah.
Did you have, before you jump into any other stuff, I had a couple things for you. Now, this doesn't have to do with folks who suffer from dwarfism, but I was thinking about this for guys like you and me, a normal size guy, because when we watch sports, I'm sure that, you know, I'm a big basketball fan and I would love to have played basketball, but again, I'm 5'9". I can't really dribble. So, right. A couple of things holding me back. But you know, I was thinking there are obviously not all sports are meant for people who are gigantic people, giant, you know, 6 foot, 7 foot giants. Yes. So I looked up some research. And again, I'm going to quote the research here. This is from a website I found called The Modest Man. So if you want to, based on their data. So if you want to critique them, please go to their website and critique them. I didn't make this list. Came up with a list based on the amount of players who are in American leagues that are the best for men under the height of 5 foot nine, right?
Sure.
So according to their research, I'll give you the top three leagues. The number one league, the number one sport for men of the height 5'9" or less is Major League Soccer, of a total of a total of 504 players. There are approximately 150 players under the height of 5'10", which means 30% of the league. And what's interesting about that is of those 150 guys, 85 of them are midfielders. So for all you 5'9" chaps, if you want to get a go in the pros and you want to be a soccer player, go be a midfielder. 34 defensemen, very few goalies, very few forwards, very few strikers. So again, limit your expectations, but midfielder, you could be a great soccer midfielder. The next one made a little bit more sense to me as well. It felt like something that would make sense. And that's the National Hockey League. With a total of 713 players, about 28 of them, or 3.9% of the league, is under the height of 5'10". So a significant
drop.
That's
wow.
Not great.
No.
But most of them are forwards. So if you're a guy under 5'10", your best chance at playing in the NHL is to be a forward. Because most of these players under this 4% of the league, most of them are forwards. Very no goalies. Okay. Don't be a goalie. No, you got to be bigger to be a goalie. And then finally, we'll look at the National Football League. Now, the National Football League is much larger. So 1,700 total players in the NFL. Okay. The total number of players under 5'10" are 90, or 5.3% of the league.
Okay. And higher percentage than hockey, right?
Higher percentage than hockey. Higher percentage than hockey. Although the league is much larger too. But again, mostly offensive positions. 18. Sure. Of these are running backs, and 11 of them are wide receivers, speed guys, right? So these do seem to be the places that guys in our height end up in before we move on to other things.
Sure.
I do have a very quick top five for you of players under 5'9", but if you want to hit anything else first, I don't want to keep rambling on here and leaving you in the lurch.
No. I there's just a couple of two interesting facts about Eddie Gaedel before before we move on. But now I haven't been there, but there's an Eddie Gaedel Pub and Grill in Elburn, Illinois, and this is about 50 miles west of Chicago. I've only seen the website. I don't know why they named it after Eddie Gaedel. I don't think it had anything to do with Elburn, but I'll definitely check it out at some point, but it seems interesting. And then this one was kind of made me smile because of its scarcity. Eddie Gaedel's autograph now sells for more money than Babe Ruth's.
You know, I saw that when you put that on here and I was thinking about it. So my assumption is that, you know, it's a rarity thing, right? Because Pete Rose is like one of those guys, right? Like Pete Rose just signs whatever you give him. He's like, yeah, anything. Here, here's my signature. Please sign it.
That's up, man.
Last time I was here, we kicked your ass.
What? That's a way to make friends there, Pete.
You can't win a World Series.
Man.
Wow. My buddy Bucky Dent says hello.
I want to ask you this question. It has nothing to do with sports, but I was thinking about it because you just mentioned Eddie Gaedel's Pub and Grill. I watched a video yesterday about a sandwich place in Elmwood Park, Illinois, called Johnny's Beef. Have you ever been to this place?
I don't think I've been to Johnny's Beef in Elmwood. No.
Okay. We'll talk. I'll cut this out of the pod. Then we'll talk about it some other time. I just wanted to bring it up. I was curious. It was a Chicago, Illinois thing. I was like, oh my God, I'm so curious. Yes. All right. So before I let you go and before we close up, I had this list. This is from Complex. So you folks can read along if you'd like. And I'm going to skip number five because I don't know that a lot of people will know Henry Richard from the NHL. But here are the top six athletes under 5'9" in pro sports history. Number five / number six is Emmitt Smith, 5'9" NFLer, eight-time Pro Bowler, four-time All Pro, one of the best to ever do it.
Yes,
I guess running back again, hard to take down, low center of gravity, right?
Yeah,
that's your benefit. Yeah,
for sure.
Number four again, soccer, 5'5", the legend Diego Maradona, one of the winningest players in soccer history, the hand of God goal, which punched England out of the World Cup and Argentina into it in 1986. Number three, baseball legend, baseball Hall of Famer, 5'7", Joe Morgan, great baseball player, frustrating baseball commentator.
Yes, number absolutely.
One of my least favorite. Number two, one of my favorite NFL players growing up, like one of the first players I remembered because he would play all the time on Thanksgiving, 5'8", running back, Detroit Lions, Barry Sanders. Oh, yeah. Maybe like the first important NFL player. Who's that guy? And again, to end it on a bittersweet note, he just passed away this year. Maybe the most famous soccer player in all the world, 5'8", the Brazilian legend Pelé.
Hey, look, it's Pelé.
Pelé is king of the soccer field. To be king of your kitchen, use Crestfield wax paper.
And there you are, our top five. Yeah, soccer.
I didn't know he was only 5'8".
I was told early on that soccer, like when I started playing with like the lads down in Brooklyn, shout out to all the guys who taught me how to play soccer, that like really height is mostly irrelevant with soccer. Like it really, it's mostly about how big your thick, your thighs and your ass are, because that's really where you get all your good speed. That was what I was told. That terminology is actually referred to as a big bottom small. In soccer, you want to be someone who's like sort of short, but like thick on the low end. That's what you want. That's like the Eden Hazards of the world.
The interesting thing about your list is there are some other players who I think I may even put, like, I would put over Joe Morgan. So you've got, I mean, really? So, I mean, because I'll be honest, I'm not the biggest Joe Morgan fan.
No, me neither.
But because you've got, back in the day, you had, obviously Joe Morgan, but then you had Yogi Berra.
I was just
5'7".
I was just going to say,
come on.
If you want to put Yogi Berra ahead of Joe Morgan, you're not going to make me upset. I want to give a shout out to this Complex list though, for putting Bruce Lee at number nine, who, when you're a small guy, you definitely were like, yo, Bruce Lee, that's my guy. I'm in on Bruce Lee.
I said, empty your mind.
be formless, shapeless, like water. Now, you put water into a cup, it becomes the cup. You put water into a bottle, it becomes the bottle. You put it in a teapot, it becomes the teapot. Now, water can flow or it can crash. Be water, my friend.
Maybe I'll do a thing on Bruce Lee one of these. People want to know about Bruce Lee. Right. Randall, before we close out, we got a minute out here. I do want to thank you for putting this together today. This was a very interesting story that it's so funny to like put the story together with, again, like this famous picture that I think with most people, right. Like honestly, when I looked up this story, I typed in 3'7" baseball player and this picture showed up immediately. And you'll see it. And you'll go, okay, I've seen that picture. So it's interesting to like put the story to the photo. So I appreciate you doing that for me, Randall.
Absolutely. My pleasure.
So, Randall, I appreciate you. We will be back next week with another episode, and I look forward to it. Brother, be safe out there, and we will talk soon.
All righty. Hey, I wanted to ask you a question, Sam.
Awesome. I love it.
This is has nothing to do with this the story today or nothing to do with baseball, but
I love it.
There was a big sports story this week that transpired, and it affects the football teams that we both root for. Mm-hmm. So Aaron Rodgers has officially been traded to the New York Jets. Now, this was kind of, we all knew it was going to happen since March, but it's been completed. So he's leaving the NFC North, right? He's been tormenting those teams for, I don't know, 15 years, right?
Mm-hmm.
And including the Chicago Bears. So they don't have to deal with him anymore. But now your Buffalo Bills are going to have to deal with Aaron Rodgers in the AFC East. So I want to ask you, what do you expect from the Aaron Rodgers-led Jets this year? And do you think that they'll have, do you think they'll have a chance to take that division?
Boy, I've had a lot of different thoughts about Aaron Rodgers for a long time. So one thing, first off, I got to say this right off the bat. I think the Jets made a mistake, not a mistake signing him, but I think they didn't need to give up half of what they gave up because there was no one else who was going. He didn't want to go anywhere else.
Sure.
I'm stunned. And I don't mean to steal this take from like Ryan Russillo, because I think I heard him say it this week. I don't understand why they didn't just make an offer to Lamar Jackson, just to make it seem like they were in the market for somebody else, to put a little pressure on the Packers. I don't understand it. Now, do I think that the Jets will be good? I thought the Jets were actually okay last year. I like their coaching. I like a lot of the players in their team. Yeah. I think before Breece Hall went down early in the season, for all you fantasy nerds out there, I thought they had a really interesting, exciting young offense. I like Garrett Wilson. I like a lot of the guys on that team. They got a little feisty defense. I'm not totally sure. I think I'm actually kind of down on their coach, Saleh, after 1 year. I was up on him at the start of the season. Okay. And now I'm like a little bit like, really? I don't know. I thought he could have got more out of that team. I guess their quarterbacks are bad. I also kind of think that Rodgers is a little washed. And I'm sure that's going to come back to haunt me when he like puts up four touchdowns. I'm not scared of Aaron Rodgers in the way that I would have been, even if like Brady had come back to the Patriots, I'd be more annoyed. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, I don't know what it is about. And maybe it's just because I don't really like Aaron Rodgers. Like, I'm not a huge fan of him, but I think he's kind of a doofus. So I'm like, for some reason, I feel like I'm not as concerned as I should be. And also, it is the Jets. I never really trust the Jets, even when they're like good, to not like shoot. That sounds wild from a Bills fan, but I just don't ever trust the Jets. I honestly think I think the Bills are probably still the betting favorite. I mean, if you're going by Vegas, I believe they're like a +135, and I think the Jets are a +200. I don't know that they'll even be better than Miami. They might be better than New England. I don't know that I'm scared of Aaron Rodgers anymore.
Yeah. So this is my thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
So first of all, I don't know why Aaron Rodgers wanted to go to the AFC.
Mm-hmm.
That makes zero sense.
No,
because he's going to have to go through Josh Allen, Mahomes, Burrow, perhaps Lamar Jackson, perhaps Justin Herbert. There's a lot of really good quarterbacks with good teams. So that being said, I don't know why he didn't want to go to San Francisco. And maybe San Francisco didn't want him, because that seemed like a team where he could go and they would be instantly the NFC favorite.
I think he missed the mark. I think he missed the mark not going to Denver, but I think you're right. I would much rather be in San Francisco with that team than anywhere on the East Coast in the AFC East, where it's going to be a rock. It's going to be a rock fight in a dark closet. It is. The rest of that division. Yeah.
In San Francisco, he really only has to worry about the Eagles, right? Hmm. I mean, they're the best team in the NFC. Yeah. So because the rest of that, the NFC West is garbage, right?
Well, let me ask you this, because I was thinking about this from the other perspective today. So we assume it. Do you assume, as a Chicago Bears fan, that this means the Packers are going to be bad with Jordan Love, or is the real concern that the Detroit Lions might be the second best team in the NFC?
I think the bigger concern is the Detroit Lions.
Yeah.
I don't know that the Packers are going to be like horrible.
No, but I think they have talent.
Yeah, they do, and I think Jordan Love has played well, but you know, it's spotty, right? He doesn't play that often. But it's still Aaron Rodgers leaving the division is a big deal for everybody in the division. And this is my other thought on Aaron Rodgers. Let's assume he finishes his career with the New York Jets. Mm-hmm. Now, you know, I think he's got 2 years left in his deal currently. And I think he's like 39, 40 years old, right?
He's getting up there. Yeah.
Okay. So let's assume he finishes his time with the Jets, maybe signs for another year. Who knows? I think that this has pretty much sealed the deal that he will only win one Super Bowl. I don't think he's going to have an opportunity to win a Super Bowl with the New York Jets. I just don't.
So I guess the question is, it's a legacy question then, right? Does he fall in this sort of like Brett Favre world where he is this one-time guy with outrageous overarching stat? I mean, he already is the new Favre, right? The story tracks. Right. It's a long-term joke. It's like they're trolling us.
Exactly.
I don't know. I don't want it to be like a thing where it's like Rodgers said dumb stuff that I don't agree with and now I don't like him. It wasn't just that. Like, I feel like I never really liked his attitude in general. He always felt like kind of a dude who thought he was just way better than everybody on his team and the other team and his coaches.
Well, yeah, I don't know. I mean, regardless of all of that, I just don't see how he can get out of the AFC.
No,
I just don't.
I don't think so. No, I don't think so.
Not with that talent. And I forgot Trevor Lawrence. I mean, even Trevor Lawrence is there and he's a good quarterback. I mean, there's so many in the AFC.
I'm glad that Lawrence turned the corner, by the way. I was talking about this with somebody last week. I was like, I just got to see that this draft pick for him to go number one was worth it. And I think last year I was like, I see it.
Oh, yeah.
Hey, since we're doing topical stuff, I just want to ask you this, just because this might be my only opportunity to talk about it, because then they start Series 2 this weekend. What are your thoughts about my second round New York Knickerbockers taking on the 8-seed Miami Heat in this 1990s throwback game?
It is incredible. I completely underestimated the New York Knicks and Jalen Brunson.
I think everybody did.
Yeah.
Knicks fans included, by the way. We were not sitting here being like, no, this team is amazing. People did not know what Brunson was going to be.
And until now, when they're saying we'd rather have them than Donovan Mitchell, right? So I think it's amazing. If you recall, I think the last episode you asked me who was going to win the NBA title. Yeah. And I said the Milwaukee Bucks. But, you know, things happen, right? I think it's incredible that Miami won. It's awesome that New York won. And one of them is going to be in the NBA Eastern Conference Finals.
Insanity. And I was thinking, so I'm sort of like I'm in two modes here. I'm in like realistic mode where I'm like, okay, Miami drags teams down into the shits every time they play. That's how they win. They drag you down into the mud and drown you, right? In their slow garbage. And then in the playoffs, Jimmy Butler turns into a monster. So I'm not super excited to play Miami, but also the Knicks are obviously the best team in the NBA and we're definitely going to win. And then we're going to go to the Eastern Conference Finals against the Celtics team, who we've already beaten a bunch of times this year, who I'm not scared of even a little bit.
Really?
No, dude, no. I would be stoked if the Knicks got to play the Celtics in the Eastern Conference. The Sixers will destroy the Knicks. I don't see any way that the Knicks can stop Embiid, even with Robinson and Hartenstein throwing 12 fouls at him a game, right? I just don't see it.
Sure.
But I think they could get past Boston. I'm not scared of Boston. Like, come on, Joe Mazzulla. Come on, no, thank you. And then I guess as my Lakers fan friend is in the other room.
Yeah.
Knicks Lakers in the finals. Knicks and six. That's where we're going.
Knicks and six. Honestly, your roll on the Lakers because they're not out yet. They haven't beat the Grizzlies. They might. And more than likely, it's looking like they would have to play the Warriors in the next round, which would be wild.
You know, I think in my initial thoughts of how the Lakers would get to the finals was I don't trust Memphis, especially without like Adams and Clark and the rest of the guys are missing and Ja with a broken hand. I definitely thought the Kings were going to beat the Warriors. I was like, oh yeah, this team is, they're hot. And then I also thought that the Lakers would definitely beat the Kings. I was like, it doesn't matter that they're like, they'll just find a way. Now that it's Golden State Lakers, I think that is probably, if that's what it ends up being, is Golden State Lakers in the next round, that's the matchup I think the NBA would like. That's the biggest marquee matchup. LeBron Curry, like that's where the money is. And what a series it would be. I would love to watch that series.
Yeah, no, it's playing out perfectly for, I think, NBA brass. I mean, the Knicks, Heat, Celtics, Sixers, and, you know, Phoenix and Denver, that's not a huge rivalry, but it'll be a good series. And then if it were Lakers, Golden State, they'd be ecstatic.
Believe me, I'm not sitting here throwing the Lakers in the finals because I want to. I just look at some of these Western Conference teams and I can't talk myself into any of them. I've watched like four Denver games in this postseason already. And I'm still like, I mean, Jokic is the man, but like, I don't know.
Yeah, no, I know what you mean about Denver. I feel the same way. I kind of like Phoenix.
I do kind of like Phoenix. I do think Chris Paul is kind of like hanging on by a thread. I think he's like really like just he's like please get me over the line this year. I can't do it again.
He is for sure.
All right, Randall, next week when we talk, I imagine all of these things I predicted will be wrong and the Knicks will be down 2-0, 3-0 to the Heat in the
and we'll just stop making any sort of takes whatsoever because it's not really our forte. Let's just stick to the history.
We'll stick to history next time. All right, Randall, I'll see you in a bit, brother.
All right, bye.